All right, I got a few questions.
All right.
Should I step out of the room?
Excited.
You guys are like the yin and the yang of sports talk.
You know I'm a basketball guy. I love basketball season.
Everything is amazing. I'm on the owner's radar.
It's never good.
Not fun.
I'm a little surprised you agreed to do this knowing that Paulie's part of the show.
He's bound to do something every show that just makes no sense at all.
Buddy, open look at a three. Got it. A layup for him.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Pauly Sebelia.
Good afternoon, everyone. Glad to have you with us. Stephen Fonte, Pauly Sebelia with you for 3 hours today. 315-437-7644 is the number if you'd like to get involved. We got 3 hours ahead of us, Pauly.
Wait, nobody told me that.
Yeah, well.
I didn't agree to that.
Yes, you did. We got a bunch of guests lined up for you. We've got Adrian Autry coming your way at 12:30. We've got Bill Hillgrove, voice of the Pitt Panthers, voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, set to join us at 1 o'clock. Evan Lepler at 1:30. He called the Syracuse-Wake Forest game over the weekend. Mike Curtis from Syracuse.com at 2 o'clock. And then Liz Habib, who's worked for Fox 11 News. She's worked at CNN. She worked out in L.A. for 16 years. She worked in Phoenix, Arizona. She is now a visiting professor at Syracuse University, and we will explain more as to why she is joining us on the show coming up at 2:30. We can talk college football championship game with her, NFL playoffs, certainly Syracuse basketball. And again, we'll take your phone calls at any time. You've got us for 3 hours, 315-437-7644. Has your blood pressure come down, Paulie, from yesterday's events and your Pittsburgh Steelers?
The whole weekend was blood pressure raising. I did the watch party with Eric on Saturday, and it's infuriating to be a Syracuse fan right now for basketball wise. And then what happened with the Steelers yesterday? Overtime win. Which, of course, NFL rules say you have to cut out of a game so you can get the start of the New York game on. So I'm sitting there not knowing what the hell's going on in that game. And then the Raiders-Chargers game last night, one of the best games I ever watched, ends on a last-second field goal that if both the teams tie, they both make the playoffs.
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And I know this is a Syracuse-based show. We'll talk SU Wake Forest and plenty of it. I have to start, though, with the NFL drama and going back to last night. You and I texted a little bit. I didn't want to text too much because I wanted to genuinely find out on the air today what that was like for you. I was watching the game. I had no dog in the fight. I was just like, you know, let's see what happens. In fact, when the Raiders went up 15, I almost turned it off. And I was like, you know what, I'll see what happens. You know, with the Chargers were driving. I was like, let's see if they score. Then they scored the touchdown. I was like, okay, I'm going to stick it out. And obviously I was riveted. But you being a Steelers fan, you knew the one thing that could not happen was these two teams tie. And they come back from down 15. They force overtime. Then there's a field goal. Chargers get a field goal. And then it felt like the Raiders were content with the tie. And then Brandon Staley calls timeout. Take me through what that was like, the overtime session, what that was like for you as a Steelers fan, knowing that if this thing ends in a tie, your team, you know, you go from euphoria thinking you're in to you're out.
I was, after the Raiders hit the field goal, I was confident that they were going to, it was going to be a three, you know, four and out for the Chargers and over. But of course it wasn't. But then that timeout comes and I'm like, what the hell is he doing? You know, because it appeared, you know, they weren't going to take a knee, but they were taking a knee, you know? And then
it was going to be off tackle to the left and just hand it off to Jacobs, kind of fall down, let the clock expire. Both teams make the playoffs, right? I mean, that was the feeling I got, that's what they were going to do.
And then they call the timeout and they poke the bear. And they didn't do anything crazy either. They ran the ball again and they got 10 yards. And I was like, holy crap, they got an extra play out of this because of that timeout. And they kicked it at they kicked the game-winning field goal. So
here's the problem I had with the timeout, because I know a lot of people have said that the timeout didn't cost them the game, that the Raiders obviously still had to run one more play, and that is true. Correct me if I'm wrong, Paulie, and I was half asleep at the time, but there was a good, 15 seconds on the play clock when they called timeout,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Something like that. So I understand the explanation that they wanted to get a certain, you know, they wanted to get their best run defense on the field is what Staley said.
Why wasn't their run defense on the field anyways? They ran the ball.
Well, that's number one. Yep, that's number one. The second thing I would say to that, the part that bothered me about the timeout is if you're going to do that, why not wait until, you know, the Raiders are at the line of scrimmage, you know, there's a couple seconds on the play clock, and then maybe, like, if you don't have the proper personnel on the field, then call your timeout, reorganize, get ready for that last play, stop them, and then the game's over. I think by calling the timeout so early in the play clock, now the Raiders are like, all right, well, if we don't pick up the first down here, now we're going to have to punt. You know, if and the Chargers had another timeout left. So if the Chargers, you know, if the Raiders are on their sideline thinking, all right, well, he just called timeout early in the play clock. If they stop us and there's 25 seconds left, they could use their last timeout. They could force us to punt. Are they trying to play to win this game? And then all of a sudden it adds, right? It adds the element of doubt to the Raiders of what's going on here. Whereas if they let the play clock run down to, you know, I think there would have been about 15 seconds left in the game. Use your timeout there. And then again, the game is essentially over. I think the Raiders were content to just run the ball, let the clock run out and head to the playoffs.
I texted a bunch of people at the 2-minute warning that this you know, they're playing for the tie now. And then that timeout came and I'll take it. Doesn't matter how. Well, ask Bill Hillgrove about that too. Sure, he was up late last night watching that also. Steve, I haven't talked to you since the SU Wake Forest game, and you know, there's a million things you can hit on in this game. I'll start with the one glaring thing that happened that everybody's talking about. That inbounds pass that apparently was a foul, and it didn't look like Buddy touched it. You know, what did you make of that? And ultimately, Syracuse couldn't get the ball in twice in that situation. They shouldn't have been in it, but then it came down to what looked like a horrible call.
What was my take? It to me, it looked like a horrible call, Paulie. It looked like... It looked like they got it wrong, and I think this was one of those cases where they ruled it one way on the court, and then they lacked the evidence to overturn it. That was my take on it. It's a shame they didn't have that last timeout, because that is a tough position to inbound the ball along the sideline there, right next to the baseline. They tried to force it to Buddy. And I think they got it wrong, but they ruled it one way on the court, and they didn't have the evidence to overturn it.
And ultimately, we'll ask Coach Autry about this. What is supposed to happen in that situation? Like, it didn't work the first time. What's supposed to happen on that play that's going to get somebody open? Because Buddy in the corner, you know, it looked like Syracuse sent people towards their basket, but Wake didn't bite on it, and they threw into a double team.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch it, Joe goes long. Whereas on the first inbounds play, you know, Joe waited for a screen and then went towards the ball. And then, so when Joe goes long, Cole comes to make a screen and there's nobody there to screen, which makes him easy to guard. So Joe doesn't get the ball because they went with him long. Cole doesn't get the ball because he has nobody to screen. And there's, you know, it makes him a lot easier to defend. And then you're forced to get the ball into Buddy's hands. And again, it's a tough place anyway on the court to try an inbounds play. They had no timeouts. And it's unfortunate because I do think the refs got the call wrong. And instead of Buddy going to the free throw line with a chance to make it a 4-point game, now Wake's got it with plenty of time, you know, 10 and a half seconds or whatever it was. And Jesse's not in the game. And they attack Jimmy again down low. And, you know, Jimmy struggled in the five spot defensively, and you got to expect that. Jesse's got to stay in the game. Frank's got to give him more. I mean, we can talk about the center position.
Do you question why Frank wasn't in the game at the end of that game?
Yeah, I did. I mean, and I understand Jim Boeheim's reasoning that he didn't play well, and he didn't play well.
He did. He did. But if you look at the stat sheet, he played fine. I mean, I don't know, like 10 minutes, 5 rebounds.
He was like minus 11 in the plus minus. And I know plus minus can be, you know, massaged a certain way like that. That's not the be all and end all.
But it's the last play of the game, and you don't have a guy who's
understood
playing center.
Understood. you know, Jesse's got to stay in the game, I think, first and foremost. Right. And what is he fouled out of four straight games? And the one that, and the foul that he fouled out on, you know, I don't know if you had the same reaction I did, but like that's just, I don't want to be mean here, but that's just dumb, right? I mean, that was a dumb foul.
Right.
On a fast break, that, you know, they turned it over. Jesse was back. You got four fouls. There's more than 9 minutes left in the game. I mean, you can make sure you don't foul. Like, if you want to contest, that's fine. But he, you know, he went to block the shot. That's it. I mean, he fouled him. Like, that wasn't a bad call. That was a bad play. And he did have some bad calls. Like, in his defense, you know, he had a couple ticky-tack ones. He had a, you know, he had a reach in. He had one where he went to contest the block. You know, he tried to block the shot, and it looked like he went straight up to call him for a foul. Like, those things are going to happen against big guys. But when you have four fouls and you know how important you are to this team, you got to stay in the game. That was just a bad play. So, yeah, I guess I was a little surprised Frank didn't come in on that last possession defensively. But it comes down to what we've talked about this on the show for years. I know you and I haven't been doing the show for years, but me with whatever host I've had, we've talked about that Jim Boeheim plays the guys he trusts in crunch time. And I think it is clear that he does not trust Frank Anselm. And so he went with the guys he trusts.
And
it was Jimmy, and Wake took advantage of it, and Wake scored, and they forced overtime. Go ahead, Paul.
Even in the trust situation, though, that you don't get an easier shot at the buzzer than that, right?
Well, yeah. And credit to Wake, they executed there, and Syracuse did not. And they were picking on Jimmy the entire, you know, last span of that game. They were picking on Jimmy, and they were trying to find ways to get the ball down low. Now, Jim Boeheim said after the game that you'd rather that they take tough twos than threes in that situation. You obviously lose on a three, you don't lose on a two, but I don't know. I think that wasn't a tough two. There weren't a lot of tough twos when Jimmy was, and so I would disagree on that statement. I understand the philosophy that you want him to take tough twos over open threes, but they didn't put up much of a fight on that possession. They don't score on the ensuing possession. It goes into overtime, and you know, it's a shame. It was a shame that SU didn't have that timeout to use on the inbound play when they were having trouble getting it in. And then in the overtime, Paulie, it was a shame that they didn't have an overtime or a timeout rather to use when Cole got that rebound on the Frank Anselm free throw miss when he's laying on the ground. It would have been great to bang a timeout there. They didn't have a timeout in either situation, and that came back to bite him.
Yeah, and that Cole thing, I don't think he even needed a timeout. I just think he needed to be less panicked, I guess, in that situation, because he had the ability to pass the ball out, and he just made a bad pass out of that situation.
Well, you say he just had to pass the ball out. I mean, where was he going to pass the ball to?
Where he did.
Well, I think that was easier said than done. He was laying on the ground. There were three Wake bodies around him, and then Jimmy was kind of in the vicinity, but he got pushed, and Jimmy kind of fell into the pile, and I don't know where he would have thrown that to. And a tie-up would have gone to Wake Forest, so a jump ball would have done them no good there. It was a tough spot for Cole to be in.
I mean,
laying on the ground and no timeouts. And what were you going to say, Paul?
Being the athlete I am, I would have made a perfect pass.
You would have figured it out.
Yeah.
You would have figured it out. I can't blame Cole there. I mean, it was a heck of a play to get the rebound. You know, he was trying to make a play. I don't know where he was going to go with that. But in any event, I mean, you look at these last three games, Paulie, and it's right there, right? I mean, Virginia, Miami, Wake, you know, it's not like they're losing by 10, 12, 15 points. Like,
you're up 18 on Miami.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. I know. They should have won at least two of these three, you would say.
Yeah.
I understand. I'm not giving them excuses. I'm just saying it is frustrating that, again, it continues to come down to a possession or two, a bounce or two. Again, if for everything SU did wrong in this game against Wake Forest, if the refs don't make a bad call on the inbounds play, Syracuse probably wins.
Yeah.
Buddy probably makes two free throws.
Or if Syracuse is capable of getting the ball inbounds, they win. Whether the bad call comes or not. If you do it the first time you run the play and you get it in and you get fouled, you win. It's not right. you can break it down to a lot of plays.
The other thing, they had to inbound it twice. Why? Because Wake didn't have enough fouls. I mean, that's again, I'm not throwing this on the refs, but I'm tossing it out there. Why is Wake Forest, you know, not at seven fouls at that point in the game, right? That's another thing you got to take into account. I mean, Wake Forest took 25 free throws. Syracuse took 14. Anyway, it's, you know, Syracuse had 10 more fouls than Wake Forest. It's a shame. But again, I'm throwing it out there is they're that close. For as many mistakes as they made, refs made a mistake with 11 seconds to go on the inbounds play. Buddy probably makes both free throws. They win the game.
You know, and we keep hearing that runs are going to come before we take this call. You know, yeah, the other team's going to make a run. If you're up 18, a run should be, you know, maybe they cut it to 10. And that run should end. And they just haven't been able to make stops when they've been up.
Yeah, and well, we've talked about this, right? I mean, as streaky as they are offensively, that when they get hot, man, they get going. And when they can't score, that's going to lead to runs from the other team. And you're right. We've seen more runs this year than usual, and I think part of it is just the way that this team plays, that they are so perimeter-oriented that when they hit a cold spell, I don't want to say it's easy for opponents to go on runs, but that it opens the door for runs.
But if you're in a cold spell, you got to play defense. You got to step up your defense.
I understand. This is not a good defensive team. And that's why, not the only reason, but that is, Jesse is so important to this team. He has to stay on the floor.
Right.
He has to stay. I mean, we could talk about why, you know, should Frank have been in the game? Jesse should have been in the game.
Right.
Right? Jesse should have been in the game. And that's four games in a row now that he's fouled out of. 315-437-7644. Dave in Syracuse kicking us off on the show today. Hey, Dave.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I just want to say a couple things real quick. One of the reasons I think that we lost is because we had Stevie Petty, otherwise known as Ted Valentine, reffing our game. Just like when we used to have Jim Burr or Tim Higgins, there would always be something with a controversial call with the referees. And I think he was the one who made that final call with that should have been a foul. But on the other note, NFL football, I'm a Dallas fan, and I really think Dallas can go all the way, and I want to see a Dallas Bills Super Bowl. Thank you guys for taking my phone call.
All right, Dave, I'd sign up for that. You sign up for that, Paulie?
Nope.
Bills Cowboys?
Nope.
No. You should just be happy your team made it to the playoffs.
No, I'm a Steelers fan. We don't settle for, hey, we made the playoffs. Now you got to win it.
All right, let's take our first time out. We've got some more callers on hold. Stay on hold. We're up against the clock here. 315-437-7644. Take our first time out here. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
Watch your favorite ESPN Syracuse sports talk shows on QSportsTalk.com.
This is Orange Nation.
Hour number two of Orange Nation on ESPN Radio rolling along. We have just received word that we will have SU assistant coach Adrian Autry joining us in the next segment. But back to the guest line we go. He was on the call for Syracuse Wake Forest on Saturday. Evan Leppler joining us here. Evan, thanks so much for coming on. We do appreciate it. We have to start with, I think, the play in the game that is most upsetting to SU fans, and that is the inbound play with about 10 seconds to go. End of regulation, Cuse up by two. Buddy says it wasn't off him. Looks like he got fouled by two different players on that particular play. I mean, you are an unbiased observer. What did you see on that play at the end of regulation?
Guys, thanks for having me on. It's good to be with you. I saw what the viewers saw, which was an inconclusive result. And as I said on the broadcast, if there was a camera on the Wake Forest bench, I think it probably would have revealed that Dallas Walton deflected it and or that there was a foul. And I think I said on the air, too, that it looked like Buddy got fouled, got bumped into by the reach. But, you know, we're not reviewing everything, even though we are reviewing everything. And that's, you know, one of my big problems with this whole concept of review. If we want to get it right, let's get it right. Why can we review who it went off of, but not if he got hit on the arm? So I empathize with Syracuse fans in that situation. Certainly, I think Buddy would have knocked down two free throws, but, you know, that wasn't the most authoritative pass into a really tight spot. So I think Syracuse could have handled that situation better as well. It's funny. I agree with your assessment that that was the toughest moment of the game, but when you teed up the question, I thought you were going to bring up one of Jesse Edwards' five fouls, because each of those seem like turning point moments as well when they happen, especially 3, 4, and 5, obviously.
Yeah, we've been on the air for 90 minutes, Evan, and we have spent plenty of time on Jesse's fouls. And the fifth one in particular bothers me, just from, you know, you got to know score and time and right. You know, 9 minutes to go in the game, you got to know you have four fouls. And you know, listen, Jesse's a good kid, and he said afterwards, it's my instinct, and I just played off of instinct. I went to block the shot because that's what I do. But he's, you know, and he'll learn from that. And Paulie brought that up, that it's a learning process, and big guys in particular go through growing pains. He's got to stay in the game, though, because you're right, Evan, that really changed the complexion of the last 9 minutes, not having their starting center on the floor for so much time.
It changed everything. I mean, Wake got very little at the rim in the half court when Jesse Edwards was on the floor. I mean, he was a force in Miami. He was a force in Winston-Salem as well when he was out there, but a few too many young mistakes, and it's unfortunate that he's, you know, school-wise a veteran, but he hasn't certainly gotten a ton of experience in the past, and I think that shows up, especially on the road.
You know, Evan, we've dissected, you know, every second of every game, and you know, that's what we do, and that's what makes Sports Talk Radio fun. You know, you've called some Syracuse games, and you're, you know, an impartial observer, and you're looking at this program from the outside looking in. You know, for us, the defense stands out to us. This team is just not good defensively. I'm curious to get some of your takeaways on this Syracuse team and what stands out to you, you know, kind of watching them from afar and calling some of their games and whatnot. What stands out to you about this team?
I think what stands out to me is just how few options that there are. And that's a byproduct of a number of things. Obviously, the system that they run, they're not going to try 4, 5, 6 other things. They try slight variations, and we saw a few glimpses of 1-3-1. You know, that was kind of morphing back and forth into a 2-3 on Saturday. But you know, the fact that there aren't a ton of options in terms of strategy, and there also aren't that many options off the bench. And you know, over the past several years, either by design or by strategy, and I think there's some coincidence, some bad luck. You know, if this team had Quincy Guerrier and Kadari Richmond, they'd be a whole lot more explosive if you add those two guys in to everyone else they have. So the fact that they don't have a ton of options to mix it up, to try other things, the fact that, you know, I mean, I'm not going to come on and be the guy that says Jim Boeheim's overly stubborn and playing what he does. I mean, it's been successful for a long time, but this is also a different era in college basketball than any of his other seasons in the past 4.5 decades have been. In the era of NIL, in the era of the transfer portal, in the era of a pandemic, in the era of differing socioeconomic situations in cities and college campuses. I mean, the world has changed. College basketball has changed. And I'm not saying Jim Boeheim cannot be successful in this era, but it's different. I mean, it's strange and bewildering for Syracuse to be 7-8 for the first time in half a century. It's bizarre. But, you know, it doesn't feel like they're in such a deep hole, obviously, that they can't get out of it. I mean, that's the interesting thing. I would not be shocked at all if Syracuse was able to find some momentum and, you know, win 7 out of 10 and get back into the middle of the pack, into that conversation, in part because the ACC is so balanced. But, you know, it's not going well right now. I mean, this 3-game homestand is critical. You got to take at least 2 out of these 3 if you're Syracuse, and I think they will. But if anything less than that, and then, you know, the other thing about the Orange lack of depth is, you know, they're one injury away from being in a really tough spot. I mean, imagine Jesse Edwards tweaks an ankle coming onto the floor, stepping on John Hughley's foot tomorrow night. I mean, and he's out 4 to 6 weeks. Then what happens? And they're really, I mean, they go small, and Benny Williams gets a big internship into how to play ACC basketball when he might not be quite ready for that yet. So, look, every team in the ACC has questions, even Duke, and I'd say even Miami. and it's as wide open as it's ever been. But Syracuse, while teams have other buttons they can push, Syracuse, I feel like, is sort of running out of buttons that they can push. And I think Jim Boeheim knows that, and I think that's why he was his typical surly self on the ACC media call this morning. He's not that chatty about what's going on. I think deep down he knows that there aren't that many answers that they can unearth.
Yeah, Evan, you know, we have you on, and our first question is about, you know, one specific inbounds play against Wake Forest. You go back to the Miami game. Charlie Moore hits about a 27-footer. That, you know, if that doesn't go in, maybe Syracuse, you know, wins the game. It does seem like more than ever, games are coming down to one possession. This isn't just unique to Syracuse. You know, we were talking Pitt basketball. They've had nine straight games decided by single digits. It seems like across this conference, Evan, that every game, or, you know, feels like it, just about every game's coming down to, you know, a possession or two at the end.
And the stats support it. I have it on my chart, and I'm not looking at my chart right now. But, you know, I mean, five of the seven games on Saturday were decided by five or less. And I think it's something like 18 out of the first 31 conference games have been decided by five or less. And, like, four others were within five in the last 4 or 5 minutes. So, no, it's not – it seems like games are coming down to the wire. Games are coming down to the wire, and it's – because no one's that good, no one's that bad, and it's really, really tight. And that was really one of my questions kind of heading into this past Saturday, and frankly, our game was too good for us to really kind of dive into the big picture, because the game was great, and Brian and I were just kind of focused on that on the broadcast. But, you know, I think there are a lot of teams in this league that are capable of putting together a run to get to 13, 14, 15 wins. I mean, remember, it's a 20-game schedule. So, you know, can Notre Dame get hot? They've won two in a row. Can Miami be a 14-6, 15-5 team? I mean, obviously we expect Duke to be good, but can Louisville get something going? Wake Forest has shown glimpses of being really good. Wake is not that far away from being 5-0 in the ACC right now. They led Louisville on the road most of that game, and in their loss, at Miami, they were right there. Davion Williamson had a three-pointer with about a minute and a half to go that would have tied the game. So, you know, Wake is 3-2. They could be 4-1, 5-0. But the question is, will one of those teams really rise up and become whatever the ACC form of great is this year? Or is it just going to kind of be like nine teams between 8 and 12 wins? And frankly, I kind of feel like it's going to be the latter, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of tiebreaker formulas discussed as we get closer to March, because the ACC tournament bracket is going to have, you know, seven teams that are between 11-9 and 9-11. I mean, it just feels like that type of season in this league.
Evan, we're running out of time, but my producer is begging me to ask you about Ultimate Frisbee. So real quick, we got about a minute, or maybe a little bit less than a minute. What can you tell us about Ultimate Frisbee? Why am I asking you about Ultimate Frisbee?
Well, what can I tell you? I can tell you everything about it. I guess folks call me the voice of Ultimate. So I played Ultimate in college, and you know, but wanted to be a broadcaster my whole life. It's interesting because you say I'm an unbiased observer. I try not to put this out there publicly because I try to be as unbiased straight down the middle as I can. I spent all of my childhood wanting to go to Syracuse. That was the school I wanted to go to because I wanted to be a broadcaster, and that's where all the famous broadcasters went, as y'all know. And I ended up going to Wake Forest. So those are kind of the two schools that I've had in my life for my whole life. And, you know, covering ACC basketball, I certainly tried not to show any partiality to Wake Forest. And frankly, I don't consider myself having partiality. I do consider myself unbiased. But anyway, you asked about Ultimate. I broadcast Ultimate Frisbee at the national and world championship level, and for the Professional Ultimate League, the AUDL, since 2013, 2014 now. And I've carved out this niche in the world of high-level Ultimate Frisbee. This past weekend, there were a couple of halftime exhibitions at NFL games. Vikings Twitter was going crazy on Sunday, saying that the Minnesota Windchill, Chicago Union halftime show was way more exciting than anything happened in the first half, where the Vikings were down 14-3 to the Bears. So I could ramble on Ultimate Frisbee for a while. But I know you got Coach Autry coming up, and I hope I was just a reasonable undercard for him. I know he's the guy that folks want to hear from.
Well, no, we loved having you on, Evan. Thanks so much, and hopefully we can talk some basketball, maybe some Ultimate Frisbee with you again down the road. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. Anytime, gentlemen.
All right, there he is, Evan Leppler. And with that, as Evan mentioned, we've got Coach Autry on the other side. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.